Welcome to the Invest with Clarity podcast, where you will learn how success in investing, as in life, is the result of absolute clarity. Mark Pearson of Nepsis in Minneapolis, Minnesota, shares his passion for portfolio management and commitment to transparency and communication to allow investors to fully understand what they own and why, bringing them to clarity in their investments. And now, here are your co-hosts, Matt Halloran and Mark Pearson.
Hello and welcome to another Invest with Clarity podcast. I'm your kind of host, Matt Halloran, with, of course, Chuck and Mark Pearson. Today, we are going to dive into addiction to prediction. And if you've been paying attention to this podcast for the last, 17, 18 years that we've been doing it, here's the deal. We talk a lot about this because it's so important. If you're truly going to invest with clarity, you have to understand the noise that's going on out there and what you should really be focusing on. Chuck, take it away.
Hey, Matt, thanks so much. And Mark, we got a really good one today, and I'm really excited to talk about this topic. Excellent. We've written on it for years, right? And yet I was watching the business channels this week and the continuing same question, what do you think is going to happen to the market? It's resounding over and over and over again. So I thought, let's recycle this anew, and this is going to be really fun today. So what I'm going to do is awesome. I'm going to read some excerpts from a white paper we wrote, Mark, several years back, but it's so applicable to today. So I'm going to take probably the first 3 minutes and I'm going to read what we wrote. And then I want you to comment and as always. So
you've got it.
Here we go. All righty. With the staggering evidence supporting humans' inability to predict the future, why do investors rely so heavily on using forecasts to make their investment decisions? Many investors keep predictions of market events at the center of their investment process. In our industry, we hear it all the time, Mark. How many times have we been subjected to the age-old question, hey, what do you think the market is going to do? This is what I want you to comment on here. Despite the fact that we actually do not know what will happen, we feel compelled to give an answer. Now, here's what we did. We took this famous Chinese proverb, those who have knowledge don't predict, and those who predict don't have knowledge.
Boom.
So I'm going to hand that to you on silver platter, my friend. Take it away.
Well, that's a fact, right? Because if you know it, it's not a prediction. It's a fact. That's exactly. Number one. Number two, I'm going to use one of my favorite phrases I haven't used in a while. I've never met an armchair quarterback who got paid any money but was always right. We live in a world of constant predictions. And what blows my mind is that the average investor has been trained to view their investment process as a function of investing, quote, in the market. You don't invest in the market. Let's dissect English here. In, that means, you know, basically, if you have a market, you're in the market. Well, you're actually only in the market if you want to buy or sell something, because you don't invest in a market. You go to the market to make your investments, and that happens to be investing in great businesses. So when people say to you or me, what do you think the market's going to do? I always say, I don't think about what the market's going to do. And they look at you kind of cross-eyed.
Yes, they do.
Well, what do you mean you don't think about what the market's going to do? Because first of all, I don't care about the market. I care about the businesses I own. The market just creates me the opportunity to take advantage of buying businesses on sale in that market.
Well said, as always. So let's take this one step deeper, and let's tie in this kind of this fear and the unknown into this whole equation. So I'm going to read again from our white paper. Investors, like all people, are drawn to predictions, especially those that play to our natural fear of the unknown. Ooh, right? Many of these portents and projections are intentionally constructed in a storytelling format designed to alleviate our anxiety over being uncertain. So let me get to this next page here. I want to talk about, in that vein, Mark, the embracing of uncertainty. So let me just read a little more here, and let's dive into this, because we feel as though we're weaker if we admit that we don't know something that's going to happen in the future, when actually, if we embrace that, it's more effective in the way that we manage money. So let me just get to what we wrote here, and then I want you to comment. The fact is, investing is an inexact science. We've talked about that, right? It's part art, it's part science, and will always have an aspect, an element of uncertainty. Additionally, investors do their decision-making abilities a great disservice when they resign themselves to a state of denial concerning uncertainty in investing. The result of resignation is ambiguity, the polar opposite of clarity. So here's Confucius, right? Another Chinese philosopher. And he said, this is what I'd like you to comment on. To know that we know what we know, and to know we do not know what we do not know, that is true knowledge. It's best to accept what you can and do know, as well as what you can't and don't know. We are fearful in this industry, Mark, because so many people think they're so intelligent, so smarter than everyone else. We simply don't know the future. I want you to just speak to that if you could.
Sure. Well, first of all, after our last podcast, Matt was very adamant, it's not the word I'm going to use, but he was very vocal about how great we did in keeping things simple. And I'm going to keep this really simple. You ever gone to a family reunion or a family get together and certainly 15 of you are sitting around staring at each other and no one knows what to say? No one knows what to talk about. No one knows what to ask, right? Whether it's a family reunion, a family get together, hop on over to grandma and grandpa's house and you're sitting there, you know, with your young bride in front of grandma and grandpa, and you don't know what to talk about. As you sit there sweating profusely in front of your wife's grandparents trying to impress them, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. It's kind of like people sitting around talking about the weather. It's kind of like people don't know what to ask when they sit around a room like that and talk to each other. Well, guess what? It's the same with investing. Investors ask what you think the market's going to do, but frankly, they don't care. And frankly, they don't know what else to ask. And I believe that what you think the market's going to do as a question, frankly, comes from people who don't know what kinds of questions to ask. Because if they did, they wouldn't ask, what do you think the market's going to do? As if what I think really matters. And frankly, am I going to be right or not? So let's break this down basic and simple. Investors don't know what they own. They don't know why they own it. They don't know the right questions to ask about the businesses they own because they don't know what businesses they own. So the fallback question has always been, will always be, to stir up a conversation. Hey, Matt, what do you think the market's going to do this year? To get a conversation going. To which, when people ask me that, I always go, do I look like I got a crystal ball? Well, I was trying to keep it simple and easy on the addiction to prediction.
Well, you did. And what you did is you walked right into the piece that I was hoping you would do about this investor ignorance and the lack of understanding of what they own and why they own it. So what happens, and correct me if I'm wrong here, they harbor under this veil of uncertainty. And they have nowhere to turn because very few firms speak about clarity. So what they do is they latch on to this storytelling component of it, right? And they continue to step into it time and time again. And you've used this quote. I'm at another quote. This was Albert Einstein, right? The great scientist of the 20th century, doing the same thing over and over again, meaning following the allure of storytelling, i.e. predictions, and expecting different results, is the definition of insanity. And the reason I think we continuously do this is because people don't realize there's an alternative out there, and they realize the whole world is defined as this when it isn't.
Yeah, so great point. It boils down to the idea that people don't understand much of anything that's happening with their money, okay? Right? And so we always are striving to get a 30,000 foot view of everything that's going on. Because frankly, even if the market does well, if the quote unquote, let's not call it the market, if the indexes do well, there's no guarantees that your portfolio is going to do well.
You got it.
And if your portfolio's doing well, it does not have any guarantees that the market is doing well, which means they contradict each other, which means it's not a logical explanation to say if this, then that. If the market does well, my portfolio does well. That's not necessarily the case. And this is where, as people dig deep into their financial plan, understanding how they're going to accomplish their goals, how they're going to sleep at night and not worry about what's going on with their money. Because ultimately, isn't that the goal? Not to worry about whether or not we're going to have enough money to live on.
Precisely.
And accomplish our goals. No one sits there and looks at their portfolio and goes, you know, I'm worried that I'm not going to get a 10% rate of return this year. They don't worry about that. They worry about, am I going to have enough money to accomplish my goals? So the idea of predictions, all predictions are designed to do is make you feel better so you can sleep at night. But the problem is predictions in general, most of the time, are not right. Particularly the majority of the predictions that have been coming out in the last 12 months, where basically most people I've listened to chatter have been dead wrong, period.
The echo chamber, right?
The echo chamber, 100%.
Hey, I'm gonna go out a turn here and you just kind of jump in because you guys, we can edit this out if we need to. But advisors have been predicting forever. You guys do Monte Carlo freaking simulations. All that is a damn prediction. How is this any different than any of that?
Well, it's a great question. First of all, Chuck, don't mind if I take this one because I love that question. Number
one, love you too.
Most clients have no freaking idea what a Monte Carlo simulation is. Not only do most clients not know what a Monte Carlo simulation means, number two, it is a prediction. Number three, most financial advisors, dare I say, are in the same box as everybody else. They're guessing. And I don't like to live in a world of guessing. And that's why here at Nepsis, it is about clarity. It's about knowing what you own and why you own it. It's about taking advantage of volatility to buy more of those businesses and then communicating with your clients what is happening with their portfolio and why. Not what's happening with the markets, not what's happening with indexes, but the actual businesses we own and how they are impacting their investment and planning goals.
Mark, I'm going to take this to a second component here, and this I think ties in what Matt asked about. So we have this, the first reason they seek predictions is because of this uncertainty, right? They don't know what they know. The second reason is they get duped into this storytelling, this allure that comes from the overconfidence of the money manager that they're seeking to give them kind of the Yoda-like answer to their problem. So I'm going to read this, and I want you to talk about this. We highlighted this back in our white paper. So according to Investopedia, the behavioral bias of overconfidence, and this is usually money managers, can be defined as overestimating or exaggerating one's ability to perform a task or an overly optimistic assessment of one's knowledge or control of a situation. So here's this 2006 study. It was done by James Montier. It's called Behaving Badly. We all know this, but let's repeat it. 74% of the 300 professional fund managers surveyed believed that they had delivered above average job performance. Of the remaining 26 surveyed, the majority viewed themselves as average. Incredibly, almost 100% of the survey group believed they had their job performance was average or better. Clearly, only 50% of the sample can be above average, suggesting the irrationally high level of overconfidence these fund managers exhibited. Almost like in lockstep, when you ask people whether they define themselves as an average, above average, or lower than average driver. So here we got this money manager who is much more overconfident in their ability, yet they're trying to sell this story to investors. Unpack that, if you would, please.
Well, number one, the money manager can think anything he wants. It's not what the manager thinks. It's what the client thinks.
Exactly.
What the investor thinks. Right? So
yes.
A money manager can think they're doing a great job. And many of them probably really do believe they're doing a great job. But the problem is that many money managers use different variables to determine whether or not they're doing a good job. if the S&P 500 is up 16% at one point during the year and you're up 12%, are you doing a good job? That's a stupid question because you need way more information to answer that question. It's not linear of saying, well, the S&P's up 16, you're only 12, you're not doing a good job. That's hogwash. That is an inaccurate, uneducated statement. There are too many variables that go into the process to determine the job that a money manager is doing. Risk-adjusted return is just one way. Alpha, beta, your standard deviation, risk-adjusted return. And when did you start the investments? What companies do you own? What percentage of those companies you own? If I got 95% of my money in one company and 5% in another, and I'm doing just as well as the S&P 500, and someone says, you're doing a great job, you're in line with the market. That's not doing a great job. 95% of the money is in one company. You're taking on way too much risk. The kind of questions that this industry gets people to ask, the kind of things that the industry gets people to think about, compare, and ask. Puts an investor, listen to this very carefully, puts an investor at a significant disadvantage in understanding what's happening with their money. It is that simple.
Yes, it is. Boy, you take it and make it so simple to understand, Mark. I got a couple of more of these here, and I think you're going to love this one. This one, we wrote again about this in that white paper. It highlights this study done by a lady by the name of Pam Dunning, and it was done in 2004, but it was widely recognized as a study that was well written in her field. And the study was titled Why People Fail to Recognize Their Own Incompetence. And basically, it noted that the worst culprits are those that are the most inept at doing their job. So I'm going to just read you what the study said, and then I want you to take it from here. The study documented that the worst performers are generally the most overconfident. For example, college students who scored in the bottom 25% of a course exam felt they were above average. The same held true for debate teams and medical students. Their conclusion was such individuals suffer from a double curse of being unskilled and unaware of it. So here's what we wrote. We see this in the investment world all the time as economists, analysts who proclaim with bold assertion their ability to predict the future are usually the ones who make one lucky call only to be followed up with poor predictions while blaming it on outside forces. So we fully believe that this dynamic is present in the investment industry as the Montier study validates. The worst economists, here's what we, and I want you to speak to this, please, are usually the ones with the boldest predictions, which likely comes from their state of overconfidence or arrogance. We see it all the time on TV. They're never held accountable, yet they continue to talk with overconfidence, and yet they're wrong more than they're right. Please speak to that, Mark.
Well, it's simple. You're someone who does predictions on an annual basis that people follow. They could have one year where their prediction is dead on and they're wrong the next 9 years. But the benchmark comes after that first year. These are variables and processes that are not apples to apples.
Yes.
These are not comparisons. And generally, the rule of thumb is most people, their predictions aren't, the media doesn't even go back and see if they were right or not. They just fill airspace. A lot of this babbling that goes on is the fill airspace. Yeah, that's what most of it is. And at the end of the day, it's kind of like a stock portfolio. A lot of portfolios, only one stock garners the 90% of the return of the portfolio. We've got the Magnificent Seven. Seven stocks have made up 95% of the S&P's return this year. That's not, you know, that's not going to always happen. It happened once. They got lucky. And so, again, ultimate benching or benchmarking of your portfolio's performance is looking at each company you own in the portfolio, why you own it, and why you own it for the overall asset allocation and how it affects the overall return of the portfolio.
Absolutely. I'm going to pivot on this. We're going to end on two charts here that we put together. The first one I think you're going to love, because not only do the economists and the analysts and the book writers speak with overconfidence, and try and predict, The news stations do the same thing. So I want to give you a statistic here, Mark, that you're going to find fascinating. This was put out by Charlie Bellello. And back in, this was the first time CNBC did this, Mark. So you and I watch CNBC nearly 12 hours a day. But on May 6th of 2010, they came out with a show called Markets in Turmoil. They were a special that they do when they believe that the market is selling off and people need more news. They have had, Mark, from 2010 to 2022, 103 market and turmoil specials. Now, here's the most beautiful thing about this. When they had that, this gentleman calculated the return on that day of the special and going out 1 year. The average rate of return is 40%. And you know what the average positive 1 year return was? 100% of the time. So if there's ever a time tool that one can use, maybe it's this.
Well, the problem with that is you're already invested when the markets go into turmoil, so you can't really do anything about it. That's why strategic cost averaging is one of the fundamental, most important components of successful investing. The ability to continue invest in a great business when it goes on sale. It's that simple.
And that brings us to the last component here of this. So I love that in that we've all, I think as advisors and many investors, know what a bull and a bear market is, right? We define these things kind of loosely, but what you say a bear market is when peak to trough, it's at least 20%. Some attach a 6 month length of time to it. Of course, the bull market is just the opposite, right? It's when the bottom to the peak is 20% or greater. So here's what I want you to end on. And this is great because this gets to the point why you always say, I'm literally on my knees praying for sell-offs because I want my businesses to at least appear to be losing a return when in fact I know that my intrinsic understanding of the value of the company is the same. The fundamentals haven't changed, just the view of a collective few have changed their buying and selling. So here's the statistic. You go back to 1929, there had been 15 official bear markets. The average duration is 20 months, so that's a year and a half. The average sell-off is 41%. But here's the key. The number of bull markets, of course, would be the same. Coming off of that bear market, the average duration is 51 months, nearly 4.5 years, right? So three times as long. The average rate of return, 162%. You've said this numerous times. I'm going to pass it off with this quote. Shelby Colby Davis once said that investors make the lion's share of the returns during bear markets. They just don't realize it at that point in time.
100%. We've talked about that before. And the idea is it's time in an investment, not timing an investment. And the time in an investment requires strategic cost averaging. Understanding the fundamentals, understanding that the business fundamentals haven't changed, and continually investing it as, and this is the most important point, as an aspect of the overall asset allocation. Asset allocation is number one. Number two, as part of that, know what you own and why you own it, so it strengthens the power of your asset allocation.
Matt, as always, I think Mark did a superb job. And I'm going to pass it back to you, my friend, to close us out. What do you think?
Well, I had this crazy epiphany, right? So you go to Target. Let's just use Target as an example. And Target is having a sale. Everybody runs to Target to buy the products that they love on sale.
Yes.
Why aren't they looking at the being able because to buy great don't. Businesses on sale? I'm crazy town over here.
That's a great analogy because they don't know what companies to buy because they don't know what they own.
Yeah. Amen,
brother. And CNBC should be proclaiming that markets in a turmoil. Hey, there's a fire sale going on. Do you want to go out and find some great businesses and use that as the tool of communication? They do just the opposite.
They'll get sued. That's why.
Getting sued, but if they're going for a news organization, brother, that's where they're going to get lots. Wait a second, businesses are on sale. I'm tuning in to CNBC to find out what's on sale.
Exactly.
See, this is why I love being with you guys. It's like I'm sitting here, I'm just passively listening. I throw a Louis at you every once in a while. And I have these epiphanies, right? That just makes me sit back and be like, why aren't people thinking about things this way? All right. So everybody, you know, this is to, you know, as a passive participant in the podcast, if my slow, not bright, human being's brain can have these epiphanies on these podcasts, your friends and family need to have these too. You need to help your friends understand what clarity is. They need to own what, they need to know what they own and why they own it. They need to know what's in there and what it's doing. And the best way for them to do that is to have actual clarity. And you can get that with Nepsis. So for Mark and Chuck, this is Matt Halloran, and we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
The content discussed is for informational purposes only. It is not a solicitation or recommendation for any securities that may be mentioned herein. Advisory services offered through Nepsis, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor.